Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Polls show that Trump and Harris are in a dead heat. Even those polls that have Trump 1 or 2 percentage points ahead are still within the statistical margin of error. After the Trump-Harris debate in July, NPR had a survey showing a jump in Democrat support, but Kamala was only leading by 2% nationwide. Currently, most polls have Harris as only 1 point ahead nationally. But that's misleading because presidential candidates don't win on the popular vote, but on the state electoral votes. Back in 2016, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but she lost the election. What matters is where a candidate is at statistically in the swing states. Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia. In Pennsylvania, which is the largest swing state with its 19 electoral votes, some polls have Harris ahead, others have Harris behind. It's essentially tied. There is more support for Harris than most conservatives realize. We tend to congregate amongst our own group, and we can't imagine that there are so many people who are pro-socialism, pro-big government, pro-LGBTQ, pro-transgenderism, pro-abortion. I spent a few days, a couple weeks ago, with my son, with his family, in St. Paul, Minnesota, Walz's hometown, and there were Harris Wall signs on just about every lawn. I just can't even imagine what these people are thinking. Actually, I can imagine. The cultural ideology of the area is that righteousness is not the moral law of God, but righteousness is affirming people in their personal moral standards. Moral lawlessness is American freedom and fairness in their minds. And, that's what's being taught in the leftist churches in the area and at the leftist Presbyterian college down the road for my son. Have you read about the church Tim Walz is attending there in St. Paul, Minnesota? The Christian Post did an expose of the church, 5 things you need to know about Walz's woke pilgrim Lutheran church in St. Paul, pro-abortion, pro-LGBT, pro-DEI, rainbow flag waving, because their God affirms man. Show me the church in the area, and I will show you the politics. As Alexa de Tocqueville famously quoted, "Not until I went to the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness that I understand the secret of her genius and power." It begins in the churches and the theology of the people. Anyway, if you go to other communities, especially in the Bible Belt, you'll see Trump and Vance signs everywhere. Americans are ideologically divided. The big question is, who has the 51%? Now, if you go to conservative sites such as Fox News or New York Post or Town Hall or Daily Wire, every article is optimistic for Trump. Here's an article. Panic at Kamala's headquarters. Brand new polling was released by Quinnipiac on Wednesday showing that Harris is dropping like a stone in some of the swing states. Quote from the article, panic is beginning to set in at Kamala's headquarters, and there's a reason for that. Brand new polling was released by Quinnipiac on Wednesday showing that Harris is dropping like a stone in some of the swing states. On September 18th, when Quinnipiac conducted their last poll, Harris was up by 5 points over former President Trump. Today, Trump is up 3 points in the same poll, an 8-point swing in his favor. In that September poll, Harris was up 1 point in Wisconsin, but the new poll shows Trump is up 2 points. In Pennsylvania, where she's spending a lot of money, she was up 6. Now she's only leading by 3. This was predictable because the reality is Harris has always been a balloon. Once you puncture the balloon, the air starts pouring out. It's quite possible that Trump's vote is being even underplayed because it's extremely difficult to get low and mid propensity voters to answer polling questions. If you're a person who's definitely going to vote, you want to talk to pollsters. You want to show your support for the candidate. But let's say there's someone who sometimes votes and sometimes doesn't vote. If a pollster calls them, that person is going to say, "Dude, I'm busy. I don't even care that much." Well, that's the point. Trump is leading among low propensity voters and mid propensity voters, 52-45. Harris is leading among high propensity voters, 51-47. Unquote, Daily Wire. Well, the bottom line is that you cannot trust the polls. Back in 2016, one poll had Hillary Clinton win in Wisconsin by 17 points, yet Trump won the state. Well, polls predicted that Hillary would win back in 2016, but she lost. And in 2020, all the polls predicted Biden would win by a huge majority. But in reality, the race was very close. Here's a research article from Vanderbilt University. Election polling in 2020 had the largest errors in 40 years. So even with modern technology, polling is getting worse, not better. And if you look at the fine print in some of these polls, like the New York Times, the Gallup, the Emerson, the 538, many times they state that their survey pool is majority Democrat. Now, if you're a Trump supporter and you want some encouragement, one of the most accurate, unbiased polling organizations is Rasmussen. The founder, Scott Rasmussen, is out of Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Their latest poll on September 19th had 49% of likely U.S. voters voting for Trump and 47% voting for Harris. But still, you cannot trust the polls. Anything could happen between now and the election. The title for this week's program is "It's Going to Take a Miracle from God if Trump wins." And of course, if you know biblical theology, you know that the results of every election is a miracle of God, because God is the one who decides who wins. God moves the circumstances, the news stories. He moves the mood of the country so that the country gets what it needs or deserves in regard to a civil leader, whether that be for cursing or blessing. Psalm 75, "It's not from the east, nor from the west, nor from the desert comes exaltation, but God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another." Then Daniel chapter 4, Daniel's word to King Nebuchadnezzar, "Until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind, and he bestows it on whomever he wishes." And Zechariah chapter 11, "For behold, I'm going to raise up a shepherd in the land, who will not care for the perishing, seek the scattered, heal the broken, or sustain the one standing, but will devour the flesh of the fat sheep and tear off their hoofs." Which is a reference to God raising up a civic leader who will, among many of his foolish policies, destroy the wealth of the elites. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 1. "The plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. How much more the pulling of the lever in the voting booth? Nobody gets into power except by God's providence." But it's the miracle of God's providence that we need to recognize rather than seeing everything as humanly controlled. Now, technically, what I mean and what people mean, and that it's going to take a miracle for Trump to win, is that God is going to have to step in and provide extra restraint on sin rather than just to let the natural proclivities of fallen man rule. Because if God let the election go according to man's natural depraved nature, the devil himself would win the election. My favorite example of God's hand of providence is how God saw to it that one little six-year-old boy changed the course of nations. 1993, Ilian Gonzalez. Remember Ilian and his mother, her boyfriend and others tried to escape Cuba by sailing to Florida. Ilian's mother drowned and Ilian went to live with his uncle. But Ilian's father and the Cuban government wanted him back. The Cuban-American community in Florida that hates Castro and communism believed that Ilian should stay with his uncle because that was his mother's wish to escape Cuba and come to America. But the Clinton administration wanted to send Ilian back to Cuba. Clinton's attorney general, Janet Reno, made a major optic mistake. She sent a SWAT team into the uncle's house to take Ilian, terrorizing the family and Ilian. And hence the iconic picture of an FBI agent pointing an assault rifle at Ilian and his uncle in the closet. This so angered the Cuban-American community in Florida that it took votes away from the Democrats. And Florida decided the 2000 election, with George Bush just having a handful of votes more than Al Gore. And with Bush in office, there was the 9/11 response, the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, the rise of ISIS. Who knows how things would have been different if Al Gore were the president, with his sole focus being on climate change. But we'll never know, because there are no alternative universes. This is God's one and only best universe. But note the occasions that God uses to move the world in a certain direction. At that time, it involved a six-year-old boy from Cuba. Amos chapter 3, verse 6. If a trumpet is blown in the city, will not the people tremble? If a calamity occurs in the city, has not the Lord done it? The point Amos was making to the Israelites is that the upcoming Assyrian invasion of northern Israel is not simply bad luck for the Jews. It's not simply the fault of those evil Assyrians. It's not Satan's persecution of the righteous. This is the hand of God judging Israel. And again, notice the means God often uses to bring about his judgments on the world. All of the causes may look like poor human choices or even good human choices, but it's still from God. Like in the case of Rehoboam, splitting the kingdom of Israel in half. The earthly occasion was Rehoboam's foolish decision to raise taxes. But the scripture tells us that this was more than just Rehoboam listening to the wrong counselors. It was a turn of events from the Lord. 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 15, so the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of events from the Lord that he might establish his word. Here's an interesting parallel. A PJ Media article. New poll suggests Kamala totally committed political suicide. And the gist of the article is that Kamala's campaign, her talking point strategy, might cost her the election. In that her handlers made a major mistake in not having Kamala distance herself from Biden, because now polls show voters want a different direction for the country than the Biden administration. She was really between a rock and a hard place. She couldn't criticize Biden's policy because she was the vice president, and she would then discredit the whole Democrat Party. But she couldn't run on Biden's record, so she had to walk a tightrope and please nobody. From the article, quote, the poll produced for ABC News finds that the public, by a broad 74% to 22%, would prefer to see Harris go in a new direction as president rather than continue the policies of the Biden administration. Even most Democrats say so. But that's not what most people expect. 65% instead think Harris mainly would continue Biden's policies versus 33% who said she would chart a new course. Later on, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Kamala faced a similar question about how a Harris administration would differ from Biden. Her response fell flat. "Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden," she said, offering no clear vision or policy distinction. Instead, she defaulted to the familiar rhetoric about her love for country and its people, avoiding any real substance. Kamala's surrogates can't even make the case that Kamala would be substantially different from Joe Biden, unquote. So the people perceive that Harris will continue the same policies of open border, using Title IX to get men and women sports, the same inflationary overspending policies, the same wars. Bernie Sanders was right when he said what was not supposed to be said. When Sanders was asked, "Is Kamala abandoning her progressive ideas?" he said, "I think she's trying to be pragmatic and do what she thinks is right in order to win the election," unquote. Harris will say anything and take any position to get elected. And she perceived that by not distancing herself from Biden, that would help her, but it might actually hurt her. The point is, campaign consultants feverishly try to measure public sentiment and tell candidates to adapt their stump speech accordingly. But consultants are never smart enough, and they often give candidates wrong advice. Like in the case of Absalom, who tried to become king by overthrowing his father David. Absalom made a tragic mistake in following the foolish counsel of his advisors. Even David prayed in 2 Samuel 15, "O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness." And when the time came for Absalom to make a decision, he ignored Ahithophel's counsel and listened to another counselor named Hushai, who gave Absalom bad advice. But Absalom took it because Hushai appealed to Absalom's pride. 2 Samuel 17, 14, "For the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel, so the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom." And Job chapter 5, verse 13, "God captures the wise by their own shrewdness, and the advice of the cunning is quickly thwarted." So let's understand that all of these seemingly small political decisions that are often considered good politics can be fatal. And it's God who blinds politicians to go in a certain direction. Now, I'm not saying Trump will win and that such articles are correct concerning Kamala's mistakes. But this we do know. The answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Tim Walz just said at a campaign that he pretty much wants to change the Constitution and do away with the Electoral College. He just alienated 20 smaller states that benefit from the Electoral College. Who knows what else Kamala or Trump might say in the next 20 days that will make or break the election. So if God decides the election, why pray? Why vote? Because God not only ordains the results, he also ordains the means. And he judges a nation according to the people's choice. For example, God decided that David would become the next king of Israel, even though most of the Jews supported the house of Saul, which was to their detriment and cursing because they didn't choose the righteous choice. Now, regardless of God's choice, God's people are required to vote for righteousness, even if God raises up a Hitler, or a Stalin, or a Pharaoh of the Exodus. Now, when God ordained that Israel would be chastened and disciplined by the invasion of the Babylonians, the prophet Jeremiah was not told to pray for a Babylonian victory. And Jeremiah wasn't sending campaign donations to King Nebuchadnezzar. So let me just take a minute and again explain why evangelical Christians believe Trump is the right man for the office and are hoping for a Trump victory. It is a choice between the lesser of two evils. Trump is not the perfect, righteous statesman. But all of the Democrats are campaigning on a pro-abortion platform. Kamala has made it clear that her primary campaign issue is pro-abortion, and she plans to push Congress to pass a nationwide pro-abortion bill, overturning all state limits on abortion, and that's pure evil. And all of the ads for regional Democrat candidates are, I am for women's choice, and my opponent is evil, and he's radical because he's pro-life. Democrats have now been emboldened to run on being radically pro-abortion, and it would be great to see the Democrats lose on that campaign strategy. Already, Democrats are finding that being pro-abortion is not the winning formula, but in their worldview, everyone wants abortion. This article here, abortion no longer turning Michigan women out to vote, poll finds. Also, the legacy media still believes that they're the kingmakers, that they have the power to take an unpopular failed candidate like Harris and make her the president. You know, it'd be great to see the media fail in their biased political propaganda. And if Trump wins the election, it will help put a lid on the censorship of conservatives by social media, by the Justice Department, by the deep state. It will help put an end to the Biden administration's prosecution of pro-lifers, their prosecution and targeting of anti-open border activists, their prosecution of January 6th defendants. And with Trump in office, we won't get an administration pushing the religion of transgenderism and DEI in all of the schools and government departments. Kamala even says she wants the government to pay for transgender medical transitioning. And with Trump in office, we'll also get hundreds of conservative cabinet appointees who will help restrain leftism in the deep state. Trump will close the border and deport the dangerous criminal element that Biden has let in, the Venezuelan gangs and such. Trump will keep marijuana illegal. Harris says she wants to legalize marijuana nationally, and that would be a disaster. And with Trump in office, there's a greater possibility of some new policy that will help Israel. Just like Trump had that breakthrough with the Abraham Accords, establishing peace between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Now, I wouldn't be surprised that if under Trump, there is a major policy initiative that somehow moves the Palestinian Muslim settlements out of Israel. You know, rather than the Democrat position of giving half the land of Israel away to the Muslims so that they can have their own nation in the state of Israel. Maybe that God has raised up Donald Trump, who has an affinity for the Jews, for this very purpose. So for evangelicals, it looks like Trump would be a better fulfillment of the 1 Timothy prayer for civic leaders that we might live a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and dignity for now. As far as America is concerned long term, and as far as the coming judgment, it's not as if Trump is going to save the day. He will merely slow down the decline, maybe buy us some more time. Just like one of the final kings of Israel, the righteous King Josiah, was told by God that the coming judgment upon the nation would not be averted, but because of Josiah's righteous policies, the destruction would not happen in Josiah's day. Now, after Josiah, there were four evil kings in succession over a 12-year period, and then the destruction of the nation. Even if Trump gets four more years, the erosion of Christianity in the populace will still continue, along with the teaching of Marxism and humanism in the public schools. Disney and Hollywood will still continue to create transgender homosexual characters. LGBTQ will continue to become more normalized in the culture. As in this week, Disney announced it now has added a transgender stormtrooper to the Star Wars saga. I recently heard it described this way, that for the left, everything in our culture needs to be repurposed for leftist ideology or be destroyed. So we know where our country is going. We know where the world is going. We know the prophecy. If a radical Marxist doesn't become the president of the United States this time, then as in Luke chapter 4 in the temptation of Christ, the devil will leave until a more opportune time. Satan is the god of this world. So if a candidate with conservative values wins, it's going to take a miracle from God. Trump will only win by the providence of God and by the providence of God alone. And did we not see this last month? In an unplanned turn of Trump's head, a bullet was averted that would have ended his life. Another sign of the hand of God determining outcomes. As we see in Scripture, how could it possibly be that Joseph became the ruler of Egypt? A foreigner, a slave, a convict in prison. Nevertheless, God set up all of the people and the economic events to exalt Joseph. How could it be that Daniel would become a high-ranking administrator in pagan Babylon, second in command under the Persians, because all of the other leadership was even too corrupt for the Persians? And how could it be that Nehemiah, who was only the king's cupbearer, would get permission and financing from the king of Persia, to lead a group of Jews back to Israel with permission to rebuild Jerusalem? The very opposite policy of the previous Babylonian administration. Well, because the Persians developed a new policy of removing foreigners and repopulating their vassal nations. And how could it be that a young girl named Esther would become the queen of Persia and be in a position to save the Jews from persecution, because it just so happened that the king's previous queen developed a bad attitude? And how could it be that Moses was raised in Pharaoh's household and received all of the education necessary to challenge Egypt as an insider? Well, because Pharaoh's daughter wanted a child and she happened to find Moses in a basket in the Nile at the right place and the right time. And how could King David, a simple shepherd boy, become the ruler of Israel and overthrow an entrenched, immovable administration of Saul? Well, because God had the prophet Samuel anoint David, and David was at the right place and the right time to defeat the Philistine champion Goliath, giving David name recognition and fame. And what are the chances that David's slingshot on the first try would hit Goliath in the forehead and knock him out? You know, it wasn't as if David had a scope on his slingshot. And those ancient swinging slingshots were highly inaccurate. And how could the Apostle Paul introduce Christianity to the world leaders in Rome? Because Paul's little nephew overheard that the Jews were plotting to kill Paul. So the venue of Paul's trial was moved out of Jerusalem and eventually to Rome. Also because the lower officials didn't want to deal with the issue and kept kicking it up the chain of command. And how could it be that Paul converted the people on the island of Malta? Well, because a storm happened to shipwreck Paul on the island. And when building a fire, Paul happened to be bit by a poisonous snake, and it came to no harm for Paul. And the governor of the island heard of this, and he happened to have a father who was sick. And by Paul's prayer, the father recovered, and the message of Christ spread throughout the island. And how could it be that Constantine would become the emperor of Rome in 325, and hence the legalization and the support of Christianity in the empire. Well, Constantine's mother was a Christian, and she laid down Constantine's worldview. His father was a general, and when Constantine grew up, he would also lead a branch of the army. And since there was so much infighting and civil war among the other leaders competing to become the new emperor of Rome, they killed each other off, and Constantine was there to fill the vacuum. God orchestrates all things according to his plan. Job 42:2. I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Isaiah 43:13. Even from eternity I am he, and there is none who can deliver out of my hand. I act, and who can reverse it? We don't know who's going to win in November. Be assured, God's in control. As I've said many times, we don't need a prophetic word concerning who's going to win. There's no spiritual necessity for God to tell his people beforehand. And actually, most often, God doesn't tell his people future details lest we begin to act in such a way to change the future wrongly. If we knew Trump was going to win, why bother voting? If we knew Trump was going to lose, why bother voting? You know, isn't it interesting how some Christians want to know the future, even when that knowledge would have no spiritual benefit? It might even be a spiritual liability. So let's not be like the world wanting to know. Let's give up our need to know and just trust God. Even if God were to give a strong impression by the Holy Spirit concerning the outcome in November, consider that a spiritually minded man would probably keep it to himself. I'm anticipating and looking forward to see how God's providence is going to work in the outcome of this election. We should always glory in and look for the hand of God in this world, because those who see the hand of God are better led by his hand. Thanks for listening. Be a student of the word, and may Jesus Christ reign.